So long before Mr. Ed, long before Shrek the Donkey, we have a story here that I think is one of the great stories of the Old Testament. We've been on this journey, as you see, for almost all of Lent. We come to the end today, where we enter a new journey next week with Jesus headed into Jerusalem. But I wanted to have one more story, and this is the one. But last week, when we think about the Israelites headed into the Promised Land, we thought last week this was it. They were right there on the border. They were going to get a lay of the land. They were going to move forward and lay hold of the promise that God had made 500 years before. You're going to have a land of your own. So Moses sent in spies to get a lay of the land, and he saw that when they came back that, A, there was this land of abundance, a land flowing with milk and honey, but also that there were people living in the land. And they had a choice to make, to either retreat in fear or move forward in faith. And they chose fear. The people had an uprising against Moses, their leader, and Joshua and Caleb, where they were saying, "Charge!" Everybody else said, "Let's retreat." So they were sent back into the wilderness for 40 years. And maybe they did that because, well, A, they were afraid, but B, they were trying to avoid conflict by not facing the people who were living in the land. And so they decided to say, let's take our chances out in the desert and out in the wilderness. But the problem is they had to face other people who didn't want them trespassing on their land. So the moral of the story is this, is that you can't avoid conflict. And I think that is a spiritual truth that we all need to learn at some point in time, is that we can't avoid difficult circumstances. We might try, but no matter what, we are going to face times in our life when there are ups and downs. This past month, we've been looking at the 23rd Psalm on Wednesday nights, and right in the middle of that psalm, you hear King David, who wrote it, say, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." It doesn't say when I, look at it from afar. It doesn't say when I take the bypass around the valley of the shadow of death. It doesn't say if I follow God, I get to walk through the valley of sunshine and rainbows and unicorns. It just doesn't say that. That we all have to walk through. Matter of fact, it doesn't make any difference who you are. This doesn't just apply to Christians or to our Jewish brothers and sisters, since it's a psalm of the Old Testament. It doesn't make any difference if you believe anything at all. It is a truth for all of humanity, is that we all have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death at some time in our lives. And so the most important question is not, how do we avoid the hard things in this life? It's not a good question because it is not possible. It's not even based in reality. Matter of fact, the better choice or the better question to ask is, what type of difficult, what type of hard do we want? That's a better question. Do I want to go through difficult circumstances alone or with help? That's really where we're going with this. Because any attempts to avoid trouble in this life, and I guarantee that trouble will find you. That when we avoid stuff, that makes its own trouble of its own. So King David, when he wrote this psalm, the 23rd Psalm, he made the decision that he wasn't going to go through life alone. I mean, it didn't end with, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm totally afraid because I'm utterly alone." That's not what it says. He says, no. As a matter of fact, he says, "I will fear no evil." And then he adds, "Your rod and your staff," God's staff, "they comfort me." Now, we have the perspective of looking at this psalm, but David wouldn't write this until 500 years after the Israelites were trying to avoid conflict at all costs. They avoid it by not going into the promised land, but out into the wilderness. And we find out that life isn't any easier out there. They get into battles with other nations. There's a food and water scarcity. Even though God promised to provide, they complain about that. Even though they could be living in a land flowing with milk and honey. Or as I said last week, a land flowing with prime rib and baked potatoes. Matter of fact, they end up complaining about the one God who brought them out of slavery. Yeah, they complain to God and complain about God for all that hasn't gone right. But blaming God doesn't change the situation. You know, when you think about it, I mean, you can blame God. God can handle it. God can handle the complaining. But I will tell you, it is not productive. It's like spinning your wheels. So they've been asking the wrong question. They've tried to avoid the pain of life, and when it didn't stop, they blame God for it. So as it turns out, most of the nations don't want these trespassers, these Israelites on their land, including the people of Moabite. The king decides to do something about it. They're trespassing. He decides, this king of the Moabites, decides to summon a sorcerer, a prophet of sorts, to curse the people of Israel. This guy's name was Balak, King Balak, and he decided to take a different approach because he'd seen how they had fought other countries and Israel had been successful. So he thought, this is what I'm going to do, is I'm going to have a sorcerer, a prophet, curse them, which might weaken them, and then I'm going to go to fight them, and maybe I'll win. So he calls on a guy by the name of Balaam to curse the people of Israel. Now, I didn't find any pictures of King Balak of the Moabites, so I had to substitute Victor Von Doom from the comic books. I hope that's okay. But that's kind of what the king wants to do. Yeah, if you weren't familiar, that's who that is. Sometimes Google Images just doesn't provide, you know, so you got to do the best you can. So King Balak, what he does is he goes and finds him by sending Balaam a message. And back then they didn't have Western Union, they didn't have the post office. So he sends his people out, and this is the message he sends to Balaam. A people have come out of Egypt, they cover the face of the land, and they've settled next to me. Now come and put a curse on these people, because they are too powerful for me. Perhaps then I'll be able to defeat them and drive them out of the country, for I know that those you, Balaam, bless are blessed, and those you curse are cursed. And I'll give you a little lay of the land there so you can kind of see where all of this is taking place. So Balaam receives the message, and he tells the message bearers, the people who delivered it, that he needs a night to sleep on this message. And the reason he wants a night to sleep on it is he wants to wait to see what God will tell him. Which is really fascinating because we discover in this very verse that Balaam is a believer in the God of Israel. Isn't that amazing? I mean, he didn't know about that the people brought out of slavery were God's people, but he's a believer in God, and he's like, I got to wait on God and see what God tells me if I can curse this unknown people that just showed up. And so he goes to bed, God gives him a message, and the answer, not surprising, is nope, don't do it. Right? Just don't do it. He's like, okay. So Balaam says, sorry, I can't go, and he sends these emissaries back. King Balak doesn't like the answer. So he gets more impressive people to go deliver a message. Matter of fact, we hear they're princes of Moab now. And he says, well, if I get more fancy people to go, maybe he'll change his mind. So they come and deliver another message for Balaam to come and curse these people. And this is what he says the second time. Even if Balak gave me his palace filled with silver and gold, I could not do anything great or small or go beyond the command of the Lord. It appears that Balaam has integrity. He won't trade his faith for money. He won't do something that is contrary to his faith and his relationship with God. And this integrity piece is really the underlying part of integrity is a wholeness issue. that there's no discrepancy of what appears on the outside than what's going on the inside. And it appears that that's where Balaam is. So he defers to God again. He says, this time, I got to sleep on it one more time. And whatever God tells me, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to submit to God's will. And he realizes, at least in this moment, and I'm using that as a little asterisk because you're going to see in a moment that that changes, that when one becomes headstrong, when one becomes prideful, when one becomes greedy, it will get you into trouble. So he tells the emissaries, I got to sleep on it, and you know, and that's what he's going to do. And it's, things seem to be on a good pace at this point, but pride gets in the way and gets him into trouble, which we will soon find out. But that's not just true in the Bible. It's true in real life, too. I'm reminded of a story back in 1986 on the Black Sea. Two ships, Soviet ships back then, collide, massive casualties, and they do an investigation, of course you would, with a boating accident. And the investigation made things even worse because they revealed the cause of the accident wasn't a technology problem. It wasn't a radar malfunction. It wasn't even a fog issue. It was a pride issue that got in the way. Each captain was aware of the other boat, and they were heading towards each other. And each of them could have steered clear, but neither captain wanted to give clear stat. They said, the other one can move. I'm not moving. They didn't want to give away to the other. They were too proud to yield. And so by the time they came to their senses, it was too late. Pride will get you into trouble. And up to this point, Balaam is avoiding this. And so he goes to bed, and God comes to him again. And this is what God says to him. If the men have come to call you, rise and go with them, but only do what I tell you. Now, it took me a while when I was studying this to come to the realization is it isn't the first invitation, the one from the day before. What God is saying is if you wake up in the morning, and as you get up, if these men, these emissaries, come to you then in the morning and tell you to go, go with them. But only do what I tell you. The problem is this is what happens right afterwards. So Balaam rose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the princes of Moab. He didn't wait and follow God's instruction on this. He woke up and he's like, let's go. Let's do this thing. So he didn't wait for the invitation. Now, what's even more interesting about this little kind of obscure piece of scripture is that in the New Testament, in a book that most people don't read, a book called Jude, Jude wrote a short letter, and Jude references Balaam in this moment. He's describing a problem in the church, and he points out Balaam's error. And so it says this in Jude 1:11, they, meaning these people in the church, have rushed for profit into Balaam's error. So Balaam, on all appearances, looked like he was following God's instruction, but the second time he doesn't. And he's like, let's go, let's find out what this is about. And then the New Testament points out to us that probably there's some greed and some pride involved in what's going on now. He tried to wait on the Lord, but greed and pride got the best of him. So he goes, and you heard part of the story. He's headed with the princes of Moab back to meet the king, and as he goes, an invisible angel, it's not visible to him, an angel of the Lord stands in his way that only his donkey can see and tries to avoid it. And I think this is a perfect picture. The donkey sees the angel and goes, that's exactly what's going on here. So the donkey is in trouble for trying to save Balaam's life. He thinks the donkey is being recalcitrant, it's being stubborn, it's not doing what it's supposed to do, and he beats his beast of burden three times. And that last time, the donkey can't go anywhere, so it just lays down. He's so angry, and then the dialogue begins. Then the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you to make you beat me these three times?" Balaam answered, "You have made a fool of me. If I had a sword in my hand, I would kill you right now." That's why I love this story. Balaam doesn't even notice that the donkey's talking to him, right? Doesn't even notice. Like, "What are you doing this to me?" You know, and he's like, And the donkey gets the best of him. I love that too. I think that's great. It goes on. The donkey says to Balaam, "Am I not your own donkey that you've ridden to this day? You've always ridden. And have I ever been in the habit of doing this to you?" And the best thing that can come out of his mouth is, "No." Like, dude, your donkey's talking to you. Hello. Like, that would be like if our dog started talking. Imagine the things they'd say to us, right? Yeah, yeah. Besides jealous and I love you for treats, yeah, right? So the angel then at this moment reveals itself and sticks up for the donkey, which, you know, hero of the story. And the angel says this to Balaam. He says, "I have come here to oppose you because your path is a reckless one before me." And kind of this moment of realization hits, instant soul searching, if you will. He admits that he sinned. And from that point on, Balaam only blesses the people of Israel in five different, what they call oracles or prophecies. So what does this story tell us about God? I mean, this is kind of where we're headed with this. This is what it tells us, is that God is not only on our side when we take on the mantle of being a child of God, but God is also elsewhere working on our behalf. Can you even imagine? I mean, when we think about our relationship with God, we're always thinking about, well, God's with me and God's present with me and God's here. But we exclude the fact that God might be working out in the world, helping us, working out situations and circumstances on behalf of God's people. Dealing with circumstances that at the time you wouldn't even know about. I mean, I'm sure the people of Israel only heard about this story after the fact. They had no idea this was going on. As it was, Balaam didn't know that they were the people of the God that he followed. So that God is out working, setting things into motion, or stopping other things that we'll never know about. I mean, other times we might actually get an inkling that God was up to something and we'll say, "Oh, what a coincidence." Well, there is no coincidence. It means that God was at work, that God had a hand in something. Which makes this even more remarkable is that Israel had turned away from God, but God never turned away from them. That even in the midst of blaming God for all their problems, God was working on their behalf. I mean, even, same is true today. I mean, that's the truth of this, is that even when we turn our backs on God and we give God our backside, God is still working on our behalf because God is good. What happens with the disciples in the boat? Faithless, terrified. And Jesus wakes up and calms the storm on their behalf. What an amazing God we follow, who's not only with us, but working behind the scenes out in the world. Things that we probably will never know until we get to heaven, of the things that God orchestrated. So we end this sermon series. We end with a talking donkey. And we begin another journey next Sunday, a journey towards Jerusalem. And guess how that story begins? Yep, with a donkey. Amen.